Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Richard Abbott on behalf of the appellants Charles and Jane Green, who are with us here today in the audience. This is an easement interpretation case. It's a reserved easement in contrast to an express grant, which would come in a deed or an easement agreement. That's a distinction with a difference, I believe, based on the interpretation test that should be applied, which is the focus of this appeal. It is our contention that the appropriate test to apply in order to interpret the easement at issue is the four-part standard, which has been followed by the courts of this state for nearly a century. This court adopted three parts of the four-part test in the Vandalay Industries decision that was issued by an en banc court in 2006. All of the current members of the court were in that five-person en banc panel. The standard of review is de novo because it was decided on a motion for summary judgment. And I've provided to you what I would contend and the Greens would contend is probably the single, not probably, but definitely the single most important piece of demonstrative evidence that's in the record before you, and that is the 1974 plan. And I've highlighted on that plan the 20-foot wide easement that is at issue here. And the reason I give that to you is you can see the stark contrast between the 50-foot wide private roads that were established for the subdivision of the 17 acres of Delaware land that were owned by Charles and Evelyn Owensby into 15 separate parcels. Instead of providing for a 50-foot wide private road to the 12.4-acre Bethel Township, Delaware County, Pennsylvania parcel to the north, which the Owensbys lived on and had their home on near the end of the driveway that runs across the 20-foot easement, they left themselves a 20-foot easement in a reservation, solely stating easement and showing it as 20 feet wide and 102.38 feet long. So what that leaves us with is an unclear, uncertain situation as to the scope of that. But I give you this at the outset because I think this sets the stage for the application of the appropriate legal standard. I'll also note in the record the same stark contrast exists in a 1965 plan that the Owensbys subdivided. They had, again, the 50-foot wide private roads, as they were called, versus a 20-foot wide area, which on that plan they referred to as right-of-way. In 1959 and 1970, the Owensbys also did prior subdivisions of the Delaware lands, and in all of those plans, they also showed 50-foot wide private roads, clearly evidencing an intent on their part that if they wanted to subdivide and develop their land, they knew and were aware they should leave a healthy width of roadway and also to designate it expressly as a private road so that they themselves would retain title to it and had control over it, obviously, so that they would be able to, if necessary, dedicate it to public use to the state. Now,
but there was a novel issue in this case, wasn't there? You're talking about earlier the 100 years of precedent, et cetera. But an increase in traffic, whether that can violate the scope of the easement, there was no case directly on that point, was there?
That's true, but it's the Green's position that the four-part standard should be applied as it was established anytime there is an issue involving the interpretation of a reserved easement, which is in this case applicable. There's no need to adopt a restatement standard, a new standard, because the four-part test does the trick. And
was the four-part test considered in the context of the first prong of the restatement?
The easement language, no, is not considered in the restatement.
Whether it was reasonably necessary for the convenient enjoyment of the servitude, was the four-part test considered as part of that or not?
No, what the restatement test, and that's what I think is most important about this from a Delaware law perspective, The restatement test focuses predominantly on the dominant estate's interests and how it would affect the dominant estate. The four-part test that's traditionally been applied by the courts of Delaware focuses on the servient estate and states that the servient estate should not be overburdened and the use of the servient of the easement located on the servient estate should not be materially increased. And so, again, the focus needs to be on how does this affect the land that the easement's on, not would it benefit the dominant estate that receives the benefit of the easement. I would contend that under the restatement test, there's almost limitless expansions of use that would be permitted. This runs contrary to traditional Delaware jurisprudence, which in every instance when this court and other courts are asked to interpret statutes, contract language, any other type of interpretive or language construction test, looks to the intent of the creator or the drafter.
Now, did you make this argument to the Superior Court, or is it something that came up after, the Court of Chancery, or is it something that came up after the Court of Chancery issued its opinion relying on the restatement because it noticed that this court had relied on the restatement?
Well, we argued, the Greens argued that the four-part test, as well as these other principles that I've stated, the general principles about not overburdening the easement, not materially increasing it, should prevail and should be the applicable test. The defendants below, now appellees, argued that the restatement should apply.
So and that an issue was squarely before the Court of Chancery, and the Court of Chancery made a choice that you would like us to reject.
Correct. And the reason for that is, as I stated, I think that there is no cause to adopt a new test or a supplementary test or an alternative test, however you want to focus it. The four-part test is adequate. It looks at the easement language. That's a standard approach that the courts use when interpreting either a contract or a statute. It looks at the easement's purpose as element number two. It looks at the nature and situation of the servient estate, focusing on the servient estate and the impact there, and it looks at the actual use, the historic use and occupancy of the easement. If applied, the language in this instance is not particularly helpful. As I noted, it says easement 20 by 102 feet. So that doesn't really tell us a whole lot, but it does tell us that it doesn't have any specific express limitation. You move on to the second element of the test. What is the purpose of it? Well, in this instance, when you look at the purpose of a 20-foot wide easement, knowing that it runs to a single-family residential home owned by the same landowners, a 20-foot wide swath of land is not typically what you would set aside for a road. It's something that you would set aside for a driveway. And you're able to look for the purpose. The Owensbys never proposed any subdivision of their Pennsylvania lands. They own the Pennsylvania lands from 1941 until about 1980-something, 85, I believe.
I'd like to ask you to focus on this point. Whenever the American Law Institute publishes a restatement, it's intended to improve the law, to come out with a better clarity, and presumably, since it's a restatement, there's going to be some jurisdictions that have a different rule ex ante. So, assuming that there is a difference between the prior precedents of this court and other courts in Delaware and the restatement, what is the policy reason to not adopt the restatement as an improvement on the law and promoting clarity in the application of the law?
The restatement, because it focuses on the dominant estate, runs contrary to, and because it does not look to the intent of the creator of the easement and look to the language of the easement and the practical or actual use, runs counter to the golden rule of statutory of construction, of language construction as applied by the Delaware courts, which is the plain meaning of the language.
But as applied by the Vice Chancellor, he did look at the intent of the original easement, didn't he?
Well, that's true, except that we believe that he focused and he did not focus on the correct issues, namely the plan that you have in front of you. if you look at this contrast between a 20-foot-wide reserved easement and established private roads of 50 feet in width, you can evince an intent from that that if the Owensbys had wanted to develop their land and set aside an area, they owned 17 acres in Delaware. They had more than adequate area to set aside a 50-foot-wide private road if they wanted to use that to access their land. If instead all they wanted was to be able to establish a driveway to access their one home on their 12-acre parcel, then they would have set aside a 20-foot-wide easement. It's kind of a common-sense approach. That type of approach, we contend, was not followed by the court below. And that's why we believe that the four-part test is appropriate, because it looks at what Delaware courts typically review in terms of interpretive and construction analysis, and it also looks to the common sense. What was it actually used for? If the Owensbys created it, which they did, and all they ever used it for was a driveway to get to their house, why would one believe that it would be intended to do something more than that? When coupled with the fact that they've clearly set forth in numerous subdivision plans a complex and comprehensive development plan for the Delaware lands, recognizing 50-foot-wide private roads are needed for those subdivision lots, it is inconceivable that they would have intended a 20-foot-wide swath that they only established as an easement, not even as a dedicated separate parcel, to get to 49 townhouse units, which, by the way, will generate 370 vehicle trips per day. Under the Owensby driveway, a couple trips a day. Under the ultimate use that's proposed by the developer, 370 trips per day. A material increase and then some. So, again, because Delaware has traditionally adopted that common sense language construction approach, I don't think that the courts of this state should stray from that. And again, if we look at the restatement test, the other reason why it's not an appropriate test is it's virtually limitless. If you say, is this a logical development of a property? Well, if you have 12 acres of land, what's logical? Is an office building logical? Maybe. It's big enough. Is a commercial development of it logical? Perhaps. Maybe not, because it's surrounded by residential. But again, you have also a limitless approach, because once you open up this road to 49 units, what's to say that they're not going to open up the next parcel over to interconnect with that? And then this easement gets burdened even further. So the restatement approach is kind of loosey-goosey and very open and liberal. Delaware courts have traditionally taken a more conservative approach and have said, we want to really zero in on the intent of the creator. And as I said, the best way to discern that intent is from the plan that the Owensbys prepared. The Owensbys are no longer with us, so they can't tell us what they intended. Now, Mrs. Owensby, lived next to the Greens for 7 years. She never informed them that she had any other plans or any other intentions to use that driveway and the 20-foot-wide easement for anything other than to get to her home. At the 1977 closing on the purchase of the lot, the Greens asked the attorney and the folks that were present, what is this easement that's shown on the plan? They were told, that's Mrs. Owensby's driveway. So they were led to believe.
What's the significance of that?
Well, we believe that, again, going to the issue of intent, if Mrs. Owensby is there at closing and she says, that's my driveway, that doesn't mean that it's conclusive. However, it does obviously lend some credence to the theory that the 20-foot-wide easement was intended as a driveway to their home. And consistent with all of the other points that I've put forth thus far. The nature and situation of the property factor also militates in the Greens' favor because of this plan. Again, just not really conceivable that one would set aside a 20-foot-wide easement to get to a large residential subdivision development. And particularly so when it's clear that the Owensbys understood 50-foot-wide private roads were what was appropriate, even to get to one-acre lots. 49 units on 12 acres is 4 units to the acre. These are one-acre lots. These are 1 unit to the acre. So if they set aside 50-foot-wide private roads to get to 1 unit to the acre, it's just inconceivable they would have intended a 20-foot-wide easement to access 4 units to the acre. Only use of the 20-foot-wide easement since 1974 has been for the Owensby driveway. Part of it apparently is located outside of the bounds of the 20-foot area. That can be easily explained based on at least 2 facts, one of which is the Owensbys built the driveway long before 1974. They bought the properties in the 40s. The driveway was there. There's nothing in the record that shows that they even knew it was outside of the easement area. And the other point would be that the Greens themselves were not even aware that the property or that the driveway was outside of the bounds because they didn't get a survey done on their property until 1979, 2 years after they closed. So based on that, we would ask that the court apply the traditional nearly 100-year-old standard, and I'll reserve and find in the Greens' favor regarding the limits on the driveway usage, and I'll reserve the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Steve Browerman of Bayard, PA, and I represent St. Edmund's Federal Savings Bank as the intervener for appellee, the Templins. I'd like to talk about 2 issues primarily today. The first issue is whether the Court of Chancery applied the incorrect standard by looking for guidance to the restatements to determine a novel issue of Delaware law, and that is whether an increase in vehicular traffic would unnecessarily or unduly burden an existing easement. The second issue, which appellants did not address and I don't intend to address in any great detail, is whether an injunction should have issued. And that the only point I'll make about that is the injunction question is entirely dependent on the application of the proper test. Appellant stated that the first prong of the restatements test is different from the traditional test that has been applied in Delaware courts for years for primarily its failure to focus on the intent of the grantor and for not having enough focus on the servient estate. Both of those, I think, are clearly contradicted by, one, the analysis the Court of Chancery undertook, and two, the plain language of the state of the restatement test. The restatement test that the Court of Chancery applied, the first prong is the reasonable use test that appellants are arguing that this court should limit Delaware law to. That test focused on the plain language of the easement. And to address the plain language of the easement, here the only language does, and it is undisputed that the language comes from the 1974 plan. It is the drawing, and it is simply a reservation of an easement. There are no restrictions there. The Court of Chancery found that the Owensbys were sophisticated developers. They developed several plans, as is indicated in the record. They submitted one. Had they wanted to restrict the scope of the easement, they certainly knew how to do that. And one point I'd like to make about appellants' efforts to revisit the facts, while the legal standard is this court reviews the court's application of the proper legal standard for de novo review on summary judgment when the facts are submitted on a paper record, this court will only review the Court of Chancery's factual findings if they're clearly wrong. Appellants, in both their briefs and in argument today.
Yeah, I think our court is held to the contrary. I think what our court has said is when we review a paper record, we see the same record that the Court of Chancery saw, so there's no deference.
That's fair, Your Honor. The only point I'd make is the Court of Chancery here visited the site, had an opportunity to make findings about the distance between the proposed easement and where the property was located, and in that sense, made findings about the burden on the servient estate that this court does not have the same vantage point on a paper record without having the benefit to visit the property. The Court of Chancery considered the intent of the grantor in the second and third components of the first prong of the restatement's test. In determining what the purpose of the easement was. And one important thing to consider is, in an easement, the fact that it's been used in one way previously does not limit an express easement, which is what we have here. So just because the Owensbys and then the subsequent grantees after them only used the easement for a driveway does not mean that at the time the easement was created and for the 30 years continuous to the present, that the easement is restricted solely to the use as a driveway. The courts of this state have clearly held that in order to abandon an express easement, there has to be an intent to abandon that. That they used it for a more narrow purpose doesn't mean that they're...
Do we have to overrule any Delaware cases to adopt the restatement?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that you would. The restatement test is entirely consistent with existing Delaware law, and in fact it provides additional guidance to courts for dealing with proposed developments. And if you look at this, if the court reviews the second and third prongs of the restatement test, I think they very carefully balance, and I think the Court of Chancery below very carefully balanced, the interests of the dominant estate and the interests of the servient estate. And it's important to consider a point I'd like to leave the court.
Do you know how many jurisdictions have adopted this section of the restatement?
I did a unscientific count, and by my count there were 13 or 14 that had adopted this statement, this section of the restatement. In doing that research, I could not locate a court that had rejected it outright. There are courts that didn't follow it in certain circumstances. But there was no court based on the facts of those particular cases. But the vast majority of jurisdictions that have considered the issue have adopted it. And it's helpful for Delaware to follow the guidance of its sister states, including Connecticut is probably the furthest along, and Pennsylvania has cited favorably this section of the restatement. And as the Vice Chancellor noted, there is no guidance. The court could find no guidance on the increase in traffic. And I'd like to address the increase in traffic for just a moment. To put in perspective, 370 trips per day is approximately 15 trips an hour. So it's not that this driveway would be constantly used, and certainly traffic would likely consolidate at certain periods of the day. But you're not talking about an unreasonable burden that is far from plaintiff's house and their pool, which they chose to locate more than 50 feet.
Well, isn't 15 trips an hour one car every 4 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. And the question here is whether that's an unreasonable use of an easement that was originally intended by the plain language and by all evidence that's submitted in the record to access a 12.3-acre parcel of property. That easement wasn't reserved for a house, and I think it's telling, and the Vice Chancellor seized on this point. The driveway predated the reservation of the easement. The driveway lies outside of the easement. The driveway is half of the distance of the easement. All those factors the Vice Chancellor considered as evidence of an intent to expand beyond a driveway at some point in the future. There, while it's clear that the Owensbys reserved 50-foot right-of-ways for the Delaware development, there's nothing here that says that they had to reserve a 50-foot right-of-way in order to subdivide the Pennsylvania lands.
And your point is the record reflects the driveway is 10 feet wide and 50 feet long, whereas the easement's 20 feet wide and 100 feet long.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the other point that the Vice Chancellor noted, which I think is an important one, is that two cars can comfortably pass each other on a 20-foot wide easement. So To divine an intent that's not their appellant's attempt to turn this issue on its head and argue that because it's silent, that means it's restricted. But I think the case law of this state and of this court is fairly clear that the court will only impose restrictions where those restrictions are clear from the language or from the party's intent. And another point on the extrinsic evidence that appellants have pointed to, the court should only look to the extrinsic evidence if the easement itself is ambiguous. No one has argued in the papers, or as I heard today, that the easement grant is ambiguous. It is a 20-foot swatch of easement permitted to access the landlocked Pennsylvania lands. There's nothing ambiguous about that. So we don't even need to go to the extrinsic evidence, which Appellee argues that, as the Vice Chancellor found, supports an unrestricted interpretation of the easement, especially here. And it's important to remember it doesn't matter necessarily whether it's a 49-unit townhome or a commercial building or whatever it is. That doesn't necessarily change the use of the easement. The purpose of the easement, when it was created, was to permit access to that parcel.
You mentioned the 12-acre parcel would be landlocked, and probably that was true at the time the easement was reserved. But the alternate argument that we see in the record here is that there's another piece of land that's currently under the same ownership, a different lot, that could be used for a 50-foot road. How does that relate to the issues in this case?
Well, Your Honor, that is certainly true, but I don't think it relates at all to the issues in this case for the primary reason that the easement was express and not by necessity. If we had an easement by necessity here, if that easement weren't reserved in the deed and it were created simply because the parcel was landlocked, it would be extinguished if there was another access or at least its use reduced. Here, though, it was an express easement. It doesn't matter whether there are 47 other access points. This court's role in this case is to determine what the Court of Chancery properly determined was the scope of that easement. And so it doesn't matter whether there are other access points. That easement exists separately and independently of any alternative access point. That would not be the case, however, if it were an easement created by necessity, because the parcel was landlocked.
But the other access points, don't they help in determining the intention of the easement?
No, they don't, because they weren't under the same control at the time the easement was created. And so when you're looking at the intent of the grantor, you have to look at the intent at the time the easement was reserved. And Lot 3 was not in common ownership was not contemplated to be in common ownership, because they were selling off, the Owensbys were selling off the Delaware lands from the Pennsylvania lands. So they did not have any other access point. So when you're trying to determine what their intent was at the time they gave the reservation, or the time they made the reservation of the easement, the parcel was landlocked. The easement was the only access point. So it doesn't matter for purposes of a determining intent what, if any, other access points were available. It would if the access point were present at that time, but because it was not.
It goes back to the discussion on the record that the 20-foot easement wasn't simply to give a driveway. The 20-foot easement was necessary to have access to the 12 acres.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. The easement was necessary to have access, although they could have... The Owensbys had all of the land. They could have reserved something else. They chose to reserve that 20-foot swatch of land for the sole access point to the Pennsylvania lands. That 20-foot access point is sufficiently large for multiple cars to traverse there. It's certainly reasonable. It's larger than the driveway that was existing. It covers a different area of land over the existing driveway. So that evidence is an intent, coupled with all the other factors that the Court of Chancery found showed the Owensbys' intent to grant an unrestricted easement, access easement to the parcel. That all supports appellant's argument and the Court of Chancery's finding that the proposed use of the easement as the primary access point to the Pennsylvania lands is proper and not an undue burden. And it's worth noting that the court considered significantly the impacts that this use would have on the appellants, and found that they didn't meet their showing to show any harm, that their property was located sufficiently far away from the easement, and in reality, the increased traffic would pass closer to their home if Lot 3 were used based on the layout. So I think what the Vice Chancellor found and what this court should affirm is that the burden to the servient estate is actually worse if you use an alternative access point.
This is a little hard to read. Where is Lot 3 on here? If you could,
I can, Your Honor, and let me. If you're holding it so that the arrow appears northward, which it should, and you're looking from left to right, you see the highlighted easement?
Yes.
The property on the highlighted easement is Lot 1. Moving towards your right looks like a semicircular shaped, or almost, I won't try to describe it, but that's Lot number 2. And then Lot number 3 is to the right. It's a
under the arrow.
Under the arrow, slightly rectangular, right above the East Fulton designation on the road is Lot 3.
Thank you.
I'd like to address, if I could for a moment, appellant's argument that the restatement test would permit limitless expansion of an increased use of an easement. I think that is contrary to the actual restatement test, in that the restatement test actually adds two additional burdens on a dominant estate holder to overcome before that increased use is permitted. So under the test advocated by appellants, just the four standards, which we argue and we believe and quite frankly don't understand the distinction that appellant is drawing between the reasonable use doctrine and the reasonable use doctrine in the first prong of the restatements. So assuming there is no difference there, it's the same test that's being applied. In addition to the traditional Delaware test that's being applied, the restatement test applies two additional tests, one of which focuses on whether the proposed development is reasonable, which provides additional protections to the holder of a servient estate. And then the third is whether the proposed use will cause unreasonable damage, again, to the holder of the servient estate. So to challenge this, or to convince this court not to adopt the restatement test, because somehow the holders of dominant estates will be able to run amok and use and abuse a servient estate is just contrary to the express language of the restatement test.
So by adopting the restatement, we're actually increasing the tests to be applied?
I think it's clarifying the test, because I think those tests are already inherent in the existing and in the existing standard. When the court looks in the existing standard at the nature and situation of the servient estate, I think the court could, under that prong, which is in the original test that Delaware courts have applied, can make all the considerations about the proposed use, whether it's normal. I think the restatement test does not really increase a burden necessarily, but it clarifies the analysis the court undertakes under the existing standard. But in this particular case, it did provide additional analyses that the Court of Chancery undertook to determine whether this increased use, which again we argue is not actually an increased use over what was permitted, but rather simply an increased use over what was historically done. The point there being the Owensbys could have used this to make 370 trips a day back in 1974. That they didn't doesn't prohibit them from doing it. And so to address Your Honor's point, Justice Ridgely, this doesn't increase the burden. It clarifies and provides additional guidance to the trial court as to the proper analysis the Court of Chancery should apply in determining whether an increased use of an easement is permitted and appropriate. And we think that it adequately balances the needs and the interests of the holder of the dominant estate against those of the holder of the servient estate. And the Court of Chancery undertook a very thorough analysis of all the factors, went through the entire test. So even if this court found that the Court of Chancery did a little bit more work than it needed to do, the court should still affirm the Court of Chancery's decision because it did apply the standard. So really, there would be no different result even if the Court of Chancery erred as a matter of law in applying the restatement test. And for those reasons, we ask that the court affirm the Court of Chancery's decision. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks very much.
Your Honors, I'll follow up on the last point Mr. Browerman just contended. The Court of Chancery did do the four-part analysis as the first part of the three-prong restatement test. I'll agree with that. However, as I noted, the Court of Chancery erred in applying the factual record to that, applying the facts to the legal standards, because, again, in the first instance, the Court of Chancery said 20-foot by 102-foot easement. That's all the language we have. The court said, well, that militates in favor of unlimited use. That is illogical in the Greens' mind because the mere statement of those terms, which are general in nature, does not imply any limit or lack of a limit. So it could just as easily be argued that that language means that it is not an unlimited use that's permitted. So really, in the end, the first factor is neutral because there's so little language. Why is there so little language? Because it's a reservation. And I think that's another point you should keep in mind. Some of the decisional law on these issues deals with express grants of easement that are included in lengthy language contained in a deed or in an easement agreement. When you have those types of documents, it can reasonably be anticipated that the creator of the language, the creator of the easement, should have been more specific. But when you draw a plan and all you do is have your surveyor put 20 foot wide and put in the word easement, it's not reasonable to assume that the person creating the easement would necessarily include limiting language. So that makes us look to the other three tests, and the other three tests all militate in the Greens' favor. The only one that the Court of Chancery found was in their favor was the actual use, because it's only been used for the Owensby's driveway. However, we have the easement purpose, and more particularly, the nature and situation of the servient estate. As I said, the nature and the situation of the servient estate is in a 15-parcel community that has, other than...
So just so I understand your current points, are you saying that the Court of Chancery misapplied the facts to the law, but at least as to the law that you're saying should be applied, did apply that law as part of the first prong of the restatement?
Correct. We're also saying that you
so
shouldn't...
No, does that mean there's no argument anymore that the Court of Chancery applied the wrong legal standard?
Well, it applied the wrong legal standard because it applied the restatement. It should have stopped and just applied the four-part test that has been in force in Delaware for 99 years.
Well, how do we reconcile the two positions? We just heard your colleague tell us that the Court of Chancery went well beyond what it needed to do, and when it addressed the various prongs of the restatement, it applied a stricter test that would have favored the Greens, but for the facts of this particular case. And you tell us the exact contrary.
No, I don't agree with him in that respect, Your Honor.
Well, I didn't expect you to agree with him, except that that's what he said. That's
understood.
What he said, isn't it?
The second prong of the restatement test looks at whether the proposed development, 49-unit townhouse project, is a normal development expansion of the land. That is focused on the dominant estate, as I noted earlier. The traditional tests applied by the courts of this state focus on the servient estate and the intent of the creator. One can argue, and it's very subjective to say, what's the normal development? You can always rezone property. You can always increase densities. How much is too much beyond what was originally there? It's very subjective and, as I said earlier, a liberal standard. I don't think that protects the Greens at all. The expanded use
Is it correct then to... If I understand your argument, that even if the current Delaware law is applied as the first prong. The error is you can still lose because the two additional prongs, once the balancing is done, can override the four factors under prong one.
Correct. We believe we prevail on at least factors two through four of the four-prong test, and there's no need for the court to go to the restatement to adopt its prong two and three of section 4.10 of the restatement.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.